On the line, I have Dr. Lucy Michael, and she's a spokesperson for Fingal Communities Against Racism. And we're going to be chatting about far-right activists and groups who are trying to stir racial tensions in Balbriggan. Good morning, Dr. Michael. How are you?
Good morning, Michael. Thank you for talking to me this morning. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Great. You don't mind if I call you Lucy, do you?
Please do.
Grant. Now, just have to get that right first. Don't want to be treading on toes or anything.
You're very kind.
Now, tell us what is happening out in North County Dublin.
Well, right across Fingal, FCAR, Fingal Communities Against Racism, have been working for the last year and a half to identify places where hateful language has been appearing in our neighbourhoods and try to equip people locally in their own neighbourhoods and communities to tackle that. And what we saw right at the start of our group, in fact, sparked it, was the attempt to label Balbriggan as a place of fails diversity, essentially, a place that difference actually diminished the quality of life rather than improving it. And we were very worried about that because what we knew, you know, living right across Fingal as our group does, is that where our communities are diverse, they're really thriving. And so we wanted to try and put the facts back into that debate. But really, you know, so much of this isn't about fact, it's about emotion. People are persuaded to think of others as different to themselves and somehow lesser. And there's many ways that that's done. So recently what we've seen is a re-emergence, really, of the kinds of hateful language we saw last year. And we're seeing it in, I guess, kind of new ways. And that is that it's arriving into your phone, Michael, on your WhatsApp, on your Facebook, whatever other social media you have. And it's coming from your friends. It's coming from people in the community that you trust. Because these new materials are designed to make you worry a little more, be a bit more concerned, be a bit more suspicious of your neighbours, worry about what's happening in the town next to you that you don't know the facts of. But because it comes from people who we trust, we think the materials are trustworthy. And that's all a strategy. So it used to be that you could kind of look at something and say, oh, I know the group that comes from, or we don't like their views, I won't trust the material they're putting out. But now it's so hard for any of us to know what's coming into our phone and whether it's truthful. And in the last 5 weeks or so, we've really seen a ramping up of that. So we wanted to get the message out to people right across Fingal and Dublin and indeed across Ireland. And we're sharing that information with networks right across Ireland about how it's happening. And particularly we've seen the impact in Balbriggan, where last week that moved from online hate to very large-scale graffiti across the walls of the neighbourhoods with violent threats in.
That's very disturbing, but it is something that I personally have noticed across, as you say, my own social media. Nothing about threats or things like that, but I would be a part of a WhatsApp group of, you know, friends and colleagues and things like that. And I have noticed an increase in racially motivated memes, you know, supposedly funny.
Yeah, that's really familiar material, yeah. And also, I guess, you're also getting messages that maybe you've heard of something criminal happening, you don't know what the truth of that is, and a lot of rumours circulate. So both the funny memes and the fictional events, they're both parts of the same playbook for the far right. And because we don't know who those actors are, and because we're getting it from our friends, it's very hard to stand up to it. I'm sure, like me, you find it so uncomfortable to turn around to say to a friend, that's not okay, even though you know yourself, you think, that doesn't sit right with me. And I think all of us are discovering now that these things don't sit right with us, but we don't know what to do about them.
Yeah, well, it's like the old adage, the best lie has a grain of truth in it. As in, whether you name a place or something that happened, and then you go off on a total tangent. It's one of the things, and we'll mention him now that he's gone, Donald Trump was very, very good at. He would, so something happened, and he would mention that, and it was right that he mentioned that something happened. But then he would take a leap from there to say, well, that was all caused because of something that has absolutely nothing to do with something. And I'll give you an incident. And I've a major problem with what I call the commercial media in this country, but not only in this country, everywhere. They're sensationalist. And at the moment, there's been a number of stabbings. And it has been blown up as this dreadful thing, and it's just after happening. Stabbings have been happening for years, donkey's years. And you get a number of them. Sometimes two or three happen at once, and suddenly we're looking at an epidemic.
You're absolutely right to identify that. And you know, if these things weren't happening, we wouldn't have a police force in this country. You know, these things do happen. And, you know, arguably we live in a society that's much more stable now, you know, and we don't see violent crime so much. So when we do see it flagged, you know, we get worried, particularly if somebody says it's happening near us, we get more worried. But the reality is, of course, most crimes that happen in this country we don't hear about at all. And so what we really see now is that smaller websites in Ireland pick up a story, they run with it, and then the mainstream media, commercial media, pick it up and make it into a much bigger story. And suddenly it looks like something new is happening, and it's not. We've seen exactly the same thing with concerns around young people in the streets. Many of our neighbourhoods that were built in the Celtic Tiger were designed on American models, which have large open spaces. Now, if anyone of your listeners has ever lived in the United States, you'll know that in the US, of course, they have neighbourhood police forces. They have strict regulations about what you can do with your piece of lawn, etc. But our neighbourhoods are much more open. And you know, when you put that side by side with limited facilities for young people, particularly since the start of COVID, when those spaces have been closed for people's health and safety, we've seen more young people on the streets. When we see more young people on the streets, we see the Gardaí trying to control them and to work out who they are and if they need to be at home. And so then we start to associate in our minds young people with the Gardaí, and we assume then that there's a criminal element to it, because that's what we think when we see the Gardaí. So what the far right are doing is playing on those associations that we make. You know, if you've heard once that Balbriggan was a place of unsafety, you hear it again, it starts to become firmed up in your mind. And we've heard that from the far right multiple times. So that's what our group tries to do, is just to balance that, to counter it and say, you know, hang on a second, the truth of that is not there. And we have to be very careful with labelling our neighbourhoods, our communities, our families and friends, because once that division enters our neighbourhoods and our communities, it's very difficult to get rid of. We cannot let it take root in our communities, because it's our children that will suffer. You know, our businesses will suffer, our neighbourhoods will suffer, our community organisations will suffer, our sports teams will suffer. You know, all of that division gets into every element of your life. So it's really important, while it's small now, while you see it coming into your WhatsApp group, when you see it on Facebook, take a friend aside, you know, private message them, ring them up and say, look, I saw this on your page. Are you sure about that? You know, would you double think about it? Would you double check it? Because I don't think that is right. It doesn't sit right with me. The more of us do that, the better we'll be able to tackle that. We can't rely on the social media companies to do it. You know, they look for reports from us. But it's very difficult to breach those community standards. So don't rely on the report button. Do report anything you see that's hateful online, of course. But more importantly, if you see it coming from somebody you know, and particularly somebody you love and trust, give them a call, ring them up and have a chat with them about why it makes you uncomfortable, and try and see it from their point of view. What is it emotionally that makes them drawn to that material? We know that facts don't work. You can't argue back with facts. So if somebody says that there's an incident in your neighbourhood and they're starting to use really abusive language, or suggest that there should be, as we saw last week, that we saw the death penalty for people who commit certain crimes, you know, have a chat with them about where that emotion is coming from. because our friends and family are also feeling under pressure at the moment with COVID. Everybody's a bit more tense, a bit more pent up, and it's very easy to shoot off comments like that online. But the more comments there are like that, the more that opinion builds and becomes associated with our neighbourhoods. So I guess two things really is, you know, one, do have those chats with your friends and family about the material that makes you uncomfortable, and check in with them emotionally, because it's very rarely about the facts of the case. It's usually about how people are feeling at the time. And I suppose the third thing is, you know, if you do see hate in your neighbourhood in terms of graffiti, in terms of stickers on lampposts, bins, post boxes, etc., you know, have a look at, see if you can remove them, you know, because being seen to be out there and removing hateful language, hateful materials is really good for community. Other people will do it too. And those people who are feeling persecuted or feeling that the neighbourhood is against them will be really glad that you have done it. You can even go as far as putting up, you know, your kids' pictures in your window, you know, no to hate, you know, everybody's welcome in our neighbourhood. You know, get the kids involved in making your neighbourhood feel a really great place. That's one of the best ways to counter that hateful language. Don't let them win.
Indeed. You're quite right there. And something that comes to mind is the incident that happened out in Blanchardstown not that long ago, when a young man lost his life. He was shot by the Gardaí, and I'm not going to say anything about the Gardaí, or I'm not going to say anything about that young man, but what does strike me that very soon after that, suddenly there were posts going up showing a man that had his facial slashed, his face was slashed, and he was in hospital, and it was all dreadful. And people were all shocked. People, you know, in my group were all shocked at this. And then somebody brought, yeah, but that's from something that happened in the UK. That photograph of that man is a man that something happened to him in the UK. It had nothing to do with it.
Yeah. When it came into my social media, I thought, oh my gosh, what is that? That's awful. And then thankfully 5 minutes later somebody sent me because you and I could have shared that picture and perfectly reasonably said, gosh, isn't that terrible? But of course, now because I've been working in this area for a while, when I see things like that, I tend to wait a little while, see if more information comes out, and then share something. But so many people did share that. It got to them emotionally. They said, this is terrible. It fit with all the other things they were hearing online about the incident in Blanchardstown. And so they shared it. And once you've shared it, it goes into your whole network and you can't control it. You can't get it back. So when we did get then that image of the man injured by football hooligans, we all said, oh gosh, you know, and I just shared it. But when you put out the message that it's not true, that's not as, it's not viral content. It's not the kinds of stuff people share as much. So it'll still get into bits of your network, but those people won't share it on. And so it never gets as far as the original message that was really shocking emotionally. So that real need to pause when we get stuff that shocks us and not just instantly share it again is crucial, but it's really hard to do. We all understand that. You know, when we see something shocking, we want to share it with our friends. We want to share it with the people that matter to us. And right now, when we can't have that cup of coffee and cake together, we hit the share button, we hit the send button, and we send it on, but we can't get it back. That's the problem with that kind of content. And you're right, that incident, and I won't comment on it either, it prompted a lot of hateful language online, in the forums, in the comment boards. And really we saw that kind of law and order issue get to people. And law and order issues do. So particularly when the far right pick on the language of thugs, or they pick on the language of gangs, those things get shared a lot and places get associated with that kind of language. And of course, when you hear the word thug or gang, you have a particular image in your head. And you associate that with that place. So that's what we're saying this week, is we're just asking people to stop and think about the memes that they're sending, the words that are being used. You know, have a think about what you're reading online, and is it coming from trustworthy people? if it doesn't sit right with you and it's come from someone you do trust, have a word with them. And try and create a balance to that in your neighbourhood, whatever way you can. It's really hard, I know, when we're all so distant from our neighbours, but get the chat going any way you can in the neighbourhood, WhatsApp, you know, share the podcast of recordings like this, and get people talking about it. And I think that it takes all of us to do that. We can't rely on just a few people doing it. So just really encourage everybody to get involved in making sure that our neighbourhoods don't get divided by that hateful language and ideas.
RTE have an ad for their News Now service. You might have seen it on the television. Have you seen that one where the young lady is sitting in a cafe and she has her phone in front of her?
Yes.
And then, you know, you see these clouds come behind her and very angry people and come charging up. I think, you know, it might go over the heads of a lot of people, but that's, to me, is talking about the need for media literacy. For people need to understand where their news is coming from. As you said, how reliable is the source? What does this mean? What is the idea of it? What are they trying to get me to think?
Yeah, and there's, I suppose there's two sides to it. One is we all have to be a bit more savvy with what we're reading and where we're reading it. And things like Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, etc., they kind of reduce our skepticism in a way because, you know, we're on Facebook every day, so you trust Facebook because that's where you put all your family photos and your kids' photos and all that kind of thing, right? That's where you chat to your sister. And so when Facebook throws something into your feed, you're more likely to trust it without thinking about where it's come from. And that's their business model that does that. So there's a balance to this. One, we have to be more literate about what we read. You know, I don't go out looking for, you know, crazy conspiracy theory websites, but they come into my social media feed via other people. So, and that makes it harder because I think I've been careful, but actually the stuff is right there in front of me, and that's what I'm reading before I even think about who wrote it. So there's one element of it is we have to get a bit more media literate. The other thing is that the media companies have to be more responsible about that. We've seen a trend, you know, we saw it around Biden's inauguration of commentators from the United States who have quite extreme views and some of whom are conspiracy theorists being commentators for that event. You know, and I and others were really quite taken aback that there was a commentator, you know, on a mainstream news program suggesting that Biden's election was a fake, you know, during the inauguration. Why does a mainstream news organization have a commentator like that on? They're supposed to be our trusted news source. So I'm trusting Ireland's mainstream radio and news and print. But if they're not using trustworthy commentators, it makes it very difficult for me and your audience to be as critical as we might be, no matter how media literate we might consider ourselves. We've seen that a couple of times with, you know, all of the major newspapers in Ireland have run commentators that are less than trustworthy when it comes to these kinds of issues. And unfortunately, the commercial models that we've talked about before, you know, that encourage clickbait, encourage those organisations to do that. So I guess to some extent, you know, we have to support organisations that we know produce good content, produce reliable content, and let them know when it's not okay. If we see a commentator or we see content that we know is not trustworthy, we need to let them know that we don't want that kind of content again.
Well, you've hit a point that goes back many years, goes back to, and I think of it in football terms, if you think of it, back to the days when we had Jack Charlton running the Irish soccer team. And then we had commentators on television. And their whole objective was to be controversial. So no matter how well the team did, they went the opposite way and say, oh, well, you know, this is wrong and that's wrong and the other's wrong. And they themselves would turn around where they've written books since and things like that and saying that, you know, that's, well, that's my job. My job is to critique, and it's not to praise, it's to critique and see the negatives and see what's wrong.
Yeah.
And we have an awful lot of that going on. It's seeped in to our whole media, where that's how the media runs now. The media runs on the negative.
And that puts people off listening to mainstream news programs. Particularly this year, we've seen people say, "Oh, the news! I'm no one to listen to the news again." But so then you're not hearing, you know, you're not hearing the mainstream news. You're not listening to what's going on. But then you are still seeing it on Facebook or wherever else. So it's still getting to you. The news is still reaching everybody.
And
but maybe
when
less reliable stuff.
You mentioned Facebook and other social media platforms. A lot of these are, and you know, I'm getting a bit long in the tooth, so the social media and that has come while I was an adult. And I've only learnt about it really through my own children have taught me how it works. And but it's run basically, a lot of it, on algorithms.
Yes.
And these algorithms, the more I click on certain types of stories and so forth that are coming in, the more it will send me, because it's saying, oh, that's what you're interested in, I'll send you more of that. So if something comes into your news feed and you click on it and you read it and you say, oh, that's strange. And then you wonder, why am I getting more of these? You know, just this must be happening, an awful lot of this happening. It's not, it's that the algorithm sees you've read something, so I'll send you more about that topic.
That's exactly how it works. And then, of course, what you see is your new views, which maybe aren't that embedded yet, being reproduced again and again in more articles coming into your feed. So, you know, if I read something, let's take the example of Balbriggan that we're talking about this week. If I read something about Balbriggan being bad and I spend 5 minutes reading that, Facebook knows I spent 5 minutes reading that. Okay, I'm interested. It sends me another article that has the same, not only the same words, but the same sentiment. So if I got an article that said Balbriggan was a bad place and I spent 5 minutes on it, it will send me more things that say that this is a bad place, rather than something that counters it or balances it. So the algorithm takes us that direction. Of course, after a week or two of seeing that content again and again, and I'm thinking, gosh, this is what's happening in the world. You know, and I just live down the road from that place. You know, what's happening there? And of course, everybody in the town is seeing it as well. We all start to believe what we're seeing in front of us. Just to give you an example, in terms of those algorithms, 60% of people who joined hate groups on Facebook found them through the Facebook algorithm. So they didn't go looking for them themselves. They were suggested to them by Facebook. That's incredible, isn't it? Facebook has actually built those hate groups through its algorithms.
Yeah, and it's easy for us to blame the media company. And in some cases, rightly so. But it's really the algorithm that they found algorithms that will churn out and do a job that they're meant to. But they have never refined those algorithms to say, to look at what they're really designed for was to send you, you know, if you were looking for a pair of shoes or things like that, it was meant to send you that sort, type of thing. But it's been incorporated into then the news feeds, and they've never upgraded them to be more knowledgeable about
exactly
the difference between news and advertising.
All of us know that, you know, that night you've stayed awake, you've been awake at 3 a.m. and you spend it looking at a new bike or a new dress or whatever, and the next day Facebook is full of those ads for it.
I'm looking at dresses the whole time.
Well, maybe you were looking at something else, Michael, in the middle of the night. But
I'm not talking about that.
A bored afternoon, you know, you're putting the kettle on and you spend 5 minutes scrolling. And, of course, Facebook drags, as do all these social media platforms, They drag information from other parts of your phone. And, you know, and I don't want to get kind of too surveillance-y about this, but when you get your new mobile phone, there's a feature on it which is automatically turned on now, and that's the listening device. So your phone is capturing a lot of your voice data. So if you're talking to your sister about wanting to go camping next summer, 10 minutes later, you know, you open up Google or Facebook and you'll have ads for tents. You know, and we've tested this because it can be quite funny, but of course it's quite sinister too in many ways. So, you know, one thing is, of course, that when we have these chats, the social media companies then are throwing us those things. And again, it's for advertising. That's how we get them for free. I don't pay for my Facebook account. I pay for it through the advertisers, and that algorithm pays, produces what the advertisers want. It produces data about me. And so, you know, at a relatively harmless level, it's putting things in front of us that we actually want. But at the more harmful level, it's taking us down those rabbit holes into conspiracy theories, into areas that we wouldn't have brought ourselves ordinarily. You know, and we can see the impact of that. You know, we've seen a lot of conspiracy theory stuff around wearing masks in Ireland recently. You know, that's a kind of global conspiracy theory stuff that never really had a foothold in Ireland. Maybe we're much too sensible under normal conditions. But we didn't see that really until the last number of months. But we've seen that kind of conspiracy theory, you know, even when a Lord Mayor of Dublin, Hazel Chu, was referred to in terms of conspiracy theory language, you know, just 2 weeks ago. And so that's very upsetting to me that those kinds of ideas and languages, not just because their impact on people like Hazel Chu, but because their impact on the people who actually believe them, who read them and believe that the world is occupied by these dark forces. You know, it can be hard if you've got a conspiracy theorist fan in your family to talk to them and to try and get to the bottom of it. Again, the answer is that emotional chat. Don't deal in facts, but get to the heart of what's concerning them. Why are they worried, anxious, etc.? Because, again, that's how this all gets in. The longer they spend looking at the stuff online, the more of the stuff they'll get. And we lose our friends and family to hateful ideas and language and conspiracy theories that way.
Indeed. And unfortunately, Lucy, we're starting to run out of time. Can I wind it up and ask the listeners to please, before you click send, before you click share, to actually stop and take 30 seconds and think about what you've seen, and maybe say, well, I'll leave that for the moment, and if I'm going to share it, I'll share it later on. And think about it before you do it. Don't just click share, because it's just spreading the lie.
I think that's great advice, Michael. Thank you very much for the chat this morning.
Absolutely delighted. Dr. Lucy Michael, many, many thanks for chatting to me this morning.
Thanks again.
All the best. Bye-bye.